Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
Good morning, Governor Lamont. Thanks for being here before the holidays. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. I think we're all looking forward to a little break, aren't we?
Oh, gosh, yes. Yes, I think we are. I think we are. And, you know, Governor, I got to be honest with you. My heart kind of broke for you the other day because in our afternoon show, our host will play the CTN network, will air your press conferences live. And it's great. It's very informative. People can hear from you right there, right out of the gate. It's wonderful. But they also can hear the reporters who are asking you the questions. And I get it. Look, I've been a reporter for over a decade. I understand what our jobs are. But it just felt like the other day when you rolled out the vaccine cards, it just felt like you could not win. It felt like you'd get a question, you know, are you putting mandates in place? Why are you doing this? And then the next minute it would be, well, why aren't we doing more? Why can't Connecticut do more? And I'm like, he just can't win. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the vaccine cards and just reiterate for folks that this is actually a tool to keep mandates off the table, correct?
So you're exactly right. You just mentioned Madison Square Garden and Times Square. Where you're going to have to show proof of vaccination. That's in Connecticut, we're leaving it totally up to the restaurant or the store and the venue. But they've said, please make it a little easier for us to verify if we elect to do that. And that's what the digital health card is. We've got it tested now for about a week. It's working pretty well. Total privacy. Your data is absolutely protected. So I hope people take advantage of it, but it's up to them.
So I'm curious about this. First of all, I think it's a great idea. I have to be honest. I hate always trying to keep track of my physical card and then being like, oh, I got to grab it. I got to find it. But I love the idea of it being on your phone, especially because it's not, again, required or mandatory. This is just if you need it when you go somewhere that asks for it, you have it. It just makes it a lot easier. That's really all it is. There's nothing really to fight about on this, I don't think. But I'm curious, are we able to use this app or this application, I guess, in other places? For example, like we're going on a cruise in February, for example. Can I use the app to show my card like when I get on the ship in the Bahamas? Does it work, or is it just in Connecticut that it will work?
I know we've got a deal going with all the regional states. I can't tell you about your cruise out of San Antonio, but all the regional states, like if you're going down to New York, you're going to Massachusetts, we wanted to make it easy, universal, and secure.
Okay, so explain it to me if you can, Governor Lamont. Is it just showing a digital copy on your phone, or what is it exactly?
It's actually a QR code. So the restaurant, say, or Bushnell would be able to scan that, be able to double check, make sure on a secure basis that you've gotten your two shot vaccination, and you're welcome to come into enjoy a performance at the Bushnell. I think you're going to find more and more, for example, restaurants. So, you know, if you're asking me, Melissa, I just assume be asked when I go into a restaurant. So I know that the person sitting next to me has been vaccinated as well. Makes me just feel a little more confident.
Yeah, no question. And we're talking to Governor Lamont this morning about the vaccine cards that have officially rolled out. I know that you can go to the Department of Public Health and set that up, right? You could just go online and figure out setting it up on your phone?
That's exactly right.
Okay. So that's something that you can check out. And again, it's nothing that's mandatory. It's just something that will make it a lot easier for you if you go places that do require you to show your vaccine card. I wanted to move on to some other things, Governor Lamont. Earlier this week, we had Senator Kevin Kelly on the show, and he was talking about releasing the Medicaid increases, the reimbursement rate. And he said that this was money, actually, about $4 million, I believe he said, that was approved back in June to be released so that we can have workers help in Medicaid, essentially. And it hasn't been released, though. It's been more than 6 months, and that money hasn't gone to it. So I was curious why, and then what we could do about that.
We certainly put in place a Medicaid increase, and that's so we can do a better job of attracting nurses and therapists and a lot of folks who we're short of right now. My understanding is it needed one more legislative approval, and if if I can accelerate that through an executive order and get this raises to people tomorrow, that's what I'll do.
Okay, so we at this point, we just need to have an – well, you said we need to have a legislative – one more, I guess.
My guys have said we need one more legislative approval. I'm not quite sure what that is, so we couldn't just release it. But
weird, okay.
I should give Kevin a call. If they give me the green light and say do it by executive order, we'll legislature come in February and verify it. I think that'd be the best. We could get the raises to people now.
I agree. No, I think that would be a game changer. Yeah, so that would be wonderful. The other thing, you know, speaking of, you know, issues in the workplace, Danbury, let's talk about really quick the Danbury Correctional Facility staffing shortage. I mean, what a mess. I didn't realize, like, cooks and maintenance workers were filling in for correctional officers because they have such a dangerously low staffing shortage. It's pretty awful what's going on.
Yeah, Melissa, that's a federal prison, so we don't have any authority there. Rikers Island down in New York City, same type of situation. I met with the corrections officers here just a few days ago and doing everything we can to keep our corrections officers working. We wanted everybody to get vaccinated. You know, I'd say the vast majority said yes. But the other one said we want a test. We said, keep working. You can take a test every couple of days. We need you working. So right now, our corrections facilities are fully staffed, but they're also stretched thin. Anybody want to be a corrections officer, sign up now.
Mm-hmm. Governor Lamont is here this morning. I was curious, Governor Lamont, you know, we have to address what's going on this morning. I'm sure you may have heard from Attorney General William Tong as well about this, because he has personally reached out to TikTok furious. In the beginning of the school year, you might remember there were kids who were, you know, destroying property across their schools. They were stealing purses from teachers. They were even punching teachers. I mean, it was awful across the nation and even here in Connecticut. And I think the attorney general had made a call to TikTok saying, "You like, what are you doing? You need to be regulating this a lot better." And now here we are this morning. We've got districts across Connecticut, across the nation, who are either canceling classes or they have classes on, but they have all their police presence at every school. I'm looking at Fairfield, Westport, Wilton, Norwalk, just to name a few this morning, who are doing this because of a TikTok challenge called National Shoot Up Your School Day. I mean, what are sort of your thoughts this morning on where we've been at lately, it feels like, especially with social media trends? And it feels like TikTok is a big offender of this.
It's the modern day equivalent of crime fire in a crowded theater. It's criminal behavior, and it's incredibly dangerous, and it's upsetting kids and parents and teachers. We've got these so-called social media threats percolating all across the country, not just Connecticut. I can tell you some good news, I hope, Melissa. You know, following up on William Tong's putting pressure on TikTok, we were working very closely with the social media companies, working very closely with TikTok. We can tell who is posting these threats. We're able to contact them, get in touch with them, and get them to stop and then come up with ways to hold them accountable. You know, many of these kids are 12, 13, 14 years of age. They think it's a lark. It's not a lark. It's incredibly upsetting to our schools. I'm doing everything I can to get kids into school. You know, mm-hmm. COVID was a barrier. Now social media is a barrier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, social media is a disaster. I think, you know, there's a lot of good. There's certainly a lot of good that comes from it. I mean, you know, you look at something like today, for example, the only reason that school districts know about what's going on is because we have access to it. We're able to, you know, have proof. And what's amazing is there's been a lot of hoax threats lately. And I think police have said the reason that they're able to find the people who are responsible for these threats, while they are younger people who I don't think realize the weight of their actions, it's because they have snapshots of social media accounts where, hey, we specifically saw this threat come through. And so there are some good to it, but then there's also, you know, you look at what's going on this morning and it's awful. It's horrible and it's costing so much money, which was going to be my next point. I didn't know what your thoughts were on having a conversation with lawmakers about what the punishment should be for these fake threats, essentially. I mean, I don't know if I know in the past it used to be that kids would do even like an overnight of jail time. But now that's mentally health. That's not good for them. But is there a way to even like pay back the towns or cities who are using the finances to have their police off the streets and at schools now, bring in federal investigators. You know what I mean? Like the amount of presence that have to go to these schools now because of these hoax threats, it's costing a lot of money.
It's costing us a fortune. Yeah. We're beefing up our cyber task force over at public safety. But remember, Alyssa, these are 14-year-olds. So right. You want to be careful and come up with a way to hold them accountable and help them get back on the state safe and true. I joked with my wife, Andy, today. I said maybe they ought to have a mandatory 4-week coding boot camp from Infosys every day after school for 3 hours.
I kind of don't hate that, though. Is that bad? Is that bad that I don't hate that?
I don't know. You know, I mean, you want a punishment that meets the crime, gets them back, and shows you what we're serious. So
right.
That was something we just played with.
I mean, I just don't feel like anyone's scared anymore, Governor Lamont. I don't know. Look, I feel like I grew up in a household where my parents were wonderful, but they were strict enough that you knew not to mess up. Like, I never wanted to get expelled from school. I never wanted to get arrested. And I just don't feel that fear with the generation now. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy, but I don't think that there's enough. And I don't know what that answer is. I'm not sure what the answer is.
Well,
part
of the answer, Melissa, is telling people, you think you're anonymous. You think you're just pushing a little button on your TikTok app. We're catching you. We're finding
right.
you. We know how to find you, and we know how to hold you accountable. And I need friends and friends of friends to say, help us as well. Just through social pressure. This is it's like you're walking through the high school, and some guy wants to pull the fire alarm. You say, don't do that. That ruins it for everybody.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. Governor Lamont is here. And Governor Lamont, also, I just really quickly, I'm sure you heard about the situation in Seymour. Absolutely devastating. The 81-year-old husband and wife who were leaving a wake, and they crossed the street and they were hit by a driver who left the scene. They still haven't found the people yet. I know UConn recently had said that they wanted to do more to make their crosswalk safer because a student was hit and killed not that long ago in the fall. And now we have this situation in Seymour, and we have some people who have called out saying, could we do more to check on these really busy intersections and crosswalks? Like, could we do more to look at those in the state?
Yeah, I can do flashing lights, but I think we also need more cops on the beat. I really do. We have hundreds more in training, getting on the beat to monitor this. Melissa, over this last year and a half, there's been a lot of really eccentric behavior. You maybe know that while driving was way down last year, speeding, in particular car-related fatalities, were up. We've got to police this very carefully. It's just one of the many different examples of extreme behavior that's come out of, the 12-month quarantine, I think. Just scared the heck out of a lot of young people.
Yeah, I mean, but it's also, when you look at, like, gun violence, it's... I don't know. I think I do know that the pandemic, like you said, the pandemic has triggered a lot of our gun violence upticks, a lot of the stolen vehicles. I mean, we just reported this morning a stolen vehicle in Hamden with an infant in the car. It's just crazy. I don't know. I don't know what the exact answer is, but it feels...
You hold those guys accountable. You steal that car, you're going to be held accountable. If this is your third offense, you're going to be detained. And Melissa, you mentioned gun violence. We have more darn guns in the street than ever before in the history of the country.
Right.
And what do you do about it? Why is it legal to walk around the public square carrying a gun? It's legal in Connecticut. It's illegal in Europe, where the crime rate is, one-third what ours is. So we got to think about this as a society. I think Connecticut should help take the lead.
I mean, but do you think it comes down to more guns on the street all the time, Governor Lamont? Or do you think like when you say you're going to be held accountable, like what exactly does that mean, though? Because it feels like we keep seeing repeat offenders still.
Look, it's guns, it's mental health, and it is repeat offenders. And making sure that repeat offender is detained and does not get back out on the street, that's a danger to the community, not to mention a danger to themselves. We've got group detention facilities. These are not prisons, by the way, because we're often talking about young people. They're teachers and counselors in there, but they're not out on the street. And I think we're going to be a lot more, I hope the judges are a lot more aggressive in using that tool.
Mm-hmm. Well, Governor Lamont, unfortunately, we have run out of time. I know I had more questions, would love to talk to you longer, but please have a wonderful Christmas with your family and a happy new year. And crazy, but we'll talk in the new year.
Hey, back at you, Melissa. Be safe, everybody. Get a good break. See your family.
Thanks, Governor Lamont. We appreciate it.
What's happening in Washington and how it affects you. Melissa in the Morning. Welcome Congressman Jim Himes to WICC 600.
Good morning, Congressman Himes. Thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. Very well, thank you.
So, Congressman Himes, I just got a release from Governor Lamont that he's actually going to be joining you this afternoon in Norwalk, it seems, to talk about efforts to look at climate-resistant infrastructure. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that's right. We will be in South Norwalk, which is subject to a lot of flooding, like a lot of our communities, Melissa, along the coastline there. You know, pretty much every little town and city along the coastline has neighborhoods that when the water rises and we get a storm, see a lot of water. So, yes, at 2 o'clock, I'll be with Governor Lamont down there, highlighting a couple of projects that will get funded by the bipartisan infrastructure bill that passed a couple of weeks ago. So we'll be doing that. You know, I'll let you know more about it next week because, as I said, it's not just a Norwalk issue. And in fact, on Monday at 5 o'clock, I'll be in the Glenville neighborhood of Greenwich because the Byram River, again, like so many of our rivers as they go into the Long Island Sound, the Byram River, when you get a big tidal flow and a lot of water, floods. And during Ida, I was in the neighborhood down there where an awful lot of people lost an awful lot of belongings because of the rising water associated with Ida.
Yeah, so I think that'll be a good conversation. Again, that's 2 o'clock this afternoon. You guys are going to be doing that?
Yep, 2 o'clock down in South Norwalk.
Okay. Congressman Himes, you know, I was Senator Blumenthal was supposed to come on this morning. He is asked to postpone till next week. And I feel like I'm not doing my job as a reporter if I don't address this. It's kind of an elephant in the room, and it has been for about a week. And I wanted to know your thoughts on this. But I'm now seeing it even in the New York Post this morning, these different articles about Senator Blumenthal speaking at an awards ceremony that was run by the People's World Committee, which is a pretty open Communist Party affiliate. Senator Blumenthal said he would like to address it, you know, maybe next week. But I feel like I'm not doing a service to my listeners who are very concerned about reading this and this idea of somebody who represents Connecticut being affiliated with this. Is there anything you can comment on that this morning?
Well, you don't need to apologize for asking the question. Journalists are all about asking the tough questions, and that's actually one of the reasons why we don't agree with the Communist Party. Because, of course, when the Communist Party was running the Soviet Union, journalists didn't get to ask tough questions. So, no need for an apology. So, sure, I'm happy to comment, but I don't have a lot to add to it. I don't know why Senator Blumenthal went to that organization. Now let's be clear, right? Let's be clear about one thing, which is that the Communist Party of the United States of America does not advocate for the violent overthrow of the American government and stuff. So, you know, I wouldn't put it in the same category of, attending some organization that did. That said, you're going to have to talk to Senator Blumenthal about why he thought that was a good idea. It's not something I would have done, for the historical reason that for, a lot of our younger people have and that didn't experience this, but you and I are old enough to remember what the Cold War was all about, what the Communist Party of the Soviet Union was all about. And obviously it was all about some really, really awful things. So, again, you'll have to ask Senator Blumenthal what his rationale was. Not a visit I would have made because of that history. I think here's speculation on my part. I believe that at that event they honored a couple of people who've been important in the union movement, and I think he was there to honor them. But that's speculative on my part. Like I said, not a visit I would have done, but I'm sure Senator Blumenthal will share with you his thinking.
Okay. Yeah, I just I was hoping to speak with him about it, and he had planned to come on this morning. But then I don't know if I spooked him by telling him we were going to talk about it. I thought, you know, give him the heads up. But I just feel like I've now, as soon as, you know, announcing that he wasn't going to come on anymore, I've now been inundated with more articles for my listeners, including the New York Post, even our own right here in Connecticut, the Yankee Institute sending us an article as well. So I just feel like I'm not doing my job if we don't address it, because it is concerning. I think It's a very shocking photo. It's a very shocking article. And it's not just coming from the right. It's also coming from the left. So that's what I felt like it was an elephant in the room that needed to be addressed.
Yep. No, absolutely. Don't be apologetic about it. Again, one of the distinctions between our system and the communist system is in our system, journalists get to ask guys like me and guys like Senator Blumenthal anything you want. And we it's a critical part of our system to hold people in positions of authority accountable and to make them explain their actions. So go to it. But I don't want to try to give you an explanation because I actually haven't talked to him about it. But maybe when you do ask him the question, I'll be listening.
Okay. I appreciate it. We're talking to Congressman Himes this morning. Let's get an update on the Build Back Better. What's going on?
Yeah, so not happening before Christmas. You probably saw that headline.
Yeah, I did.
Chuck Schumer had said that he was hopeful that it would, but it did not. No surprise there, frankly. You know, whatever you think of Build Back Better, and as you know, there's some things in that bill that I think are going to be transformative for our communities. Not that I love it all, but there's some really important things, especially universal child care for people who want to send their kids to early childhood education. But we've got a 50-50 majority, and the senator from West Virginia, Mr. Manchin, carries a very big stick, and he's not there yet. So anyway, it looks to be something we may be talking about in January, but definitely not happening before we all part ways for the holidays.
Mm-hmm. Anything else on your agenda, Congressman Himes? I know we won't be checking in, the next 2 weeks, because we have those Fridays off for, obviously, Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve. Anything else before we head into the new year that you want folks to know about?
Yeah, one thing that I think is really important, we finally got the National Defense Authorization Act passed, and this will be the first authorization act we've passed since the United States fully withdrew from Afghanistan. And I want to highlight that because, you know, my hope is that now for the first time we're actually not engaged in 20 years in a war in Afghanistan. We're not engaged in a war in Iraq. So my hope is that, over time we'll be able to sort of give our troops a break from the operational tempo they were operating on for a very long time, maybe find some savings since we're not engaged in war. But I do also want to highlight that the act is really a very good piece of legislation for the state of Connecticut. You know, we don't talk about this much, but we have some of the very best manufacturers. And when I say manufacturers, I'm not talking about, you know, some guy stamping something on an assembly line. We're talking about people enormously skilled, big building submarines in New London, Connecticut, building jet engines in Hartford, Connecticut, building helicopters in Stratford and Bridgeport. And there's an awful lot of very, very talented manufacturers who are going to see their jobs be much more secure because of the passage of this bill in the communities I just mentioned. So, look, I know the military budget is subject to a lot of debate, and I agree with that debate, and I think it's important to have it, but the passage of that bill is going to mean a lot to a lot of families in Connecticut who work for those organizations, and just wanted to highlight that.
Yeah, and I know you'll obviously keep us posted on what happens, especially with Build Back Better, of course, and crazy to think, but Congressman Himes, thank you for coming on. We will talk to you in the new year.
Sounds good. Happy holidays and Merry Christmas to you, Melissa.
Thank you. You too, Congressman Himes, and to your family. We're checking in now with our cybersecurity expert, Vahid Behzadun. Dr. Behzadun is with the University of New Haven. He comes on every couple of weeks to chat with us and give us the heads up on our cybersecurity and what we could better be aware of. Good morning, Vahid. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me. How are you?
Of course. I'm doing fine, Vahid. I feel like it's been a while since having you on. I'm so glad to talk to you.
Same here.
And we have a couple of topics to dive into this morning. I want to talk, it's a little out of order, but let's start with cybersecurity while traveling, only because there are so many people who, after this week, they are off the grid, right? Next week and into the new year, this is the big travel time for many people. It was Thanksgiving and then, of course, the Christmas, New Year's holiday. So what are some of the things you want to discuss when it comes to cybersecurity while traveling?
Well, just like any other aspect of our lives, traveling does require a certain degree of cyber hygiene to be observed. One of the most crucial aspects of cyber hygiene while traveling is networking communications, and in particular, Wi-Fi. If you're staying at a hotel, or if you just want to use the Wi-Fi at a restaurant or a coffee shop while you're traveling, you need to make sure that you're aware of the fact that public Wi-Fi networks are not guaranteed to be secure. even if those Wi-Fi networks are advertised as the official hotel Wi-Fi, official resort Wi-Fi, official even Starbucks Wi-Fi, it's very important to keep in mind that those networks are not necessarily secure and are not necessarily provided by the name on the network. When you look up Wi-Fi networks to connect to, you see the names of those networks. If it says it's, let's say, Starbucks guest Wi-Fi or hotel guest Wi-Fi, it doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily true, honest, and reliable. Mm. It can be another network set up by some cyber criminal who wishes to act as man in the middle to essentially listen in on your communications and internet transactions and steal your personal information. So practicing caution while using public networks is something that I highly recommend to those who will be traveling in the coming weeks. It's very important to note that anyone, even if the network, the public network is secure, anyone in the vicinity of that network may be able to listen to your communication. So how can you still use those public networks for your daily or everyday usage? It's very important to keep an eye out for login pages that are not using secure communication.
I was going to say, do you mean, Vahid, when you are in a public place, for example, I'm thinking airport or hotel, like you mentioned, or even a Starbucks, and it says that it's like open. You know how sometimes you'll see the lock next to it and you know you have to log in with some kind of code that either a company will give you or if you're at a person's house, they'll give you their password. If there's an open place to access, that's probably something you shouldn't click on, right?
Well, sometimes you have no other options. If you're staying at a hotel with a public Wi-Fi network and that's the only type of internet communication available to the guests at that hotel, you still may end up having to connect to that network. But when you connect to that network, you need to practice caution. First of all, if you're logging into any websites, make sure that those websites, those platforms, those apps are using secure socket layer, TLS, or in simpler words, HTTPS. They're not just HTTP:// They're HTTPS:// if you're using the Chrome browser or Firefox or Microsoft Edge, you'll be able to see a green lock sign next to the URL box while you're logging in. That adds to the degree of security in your communications, even on a public network, because it essentially encrypts your communications with that website and nobody in the middle will be able to listen in. If you are worried about, if you're logging into work-related platforms and you're worried about breach of confidential information, you might want to ask your employer or the organization that you're connecting to provide you with a VPN connection, a virtual private network connection. That would add another layer of security on top of it. But in general, being aware of the fact that others can listen in on your communications on public networks, on hotel networks, airport networks, coffee shop networks, and so on, is half the solution, because now you know not to completely trust the connection and not to use it the same way you would at home or at work.
Yeah, it can be really, really tricky, because when you're sort of out of your comfort zone as is, you know, and you're not at home or you're not in your regular routine, I feel like you're on such high alert for so many different things that the Wi-Fi is one of the last things you think about. And what you're, you know, looking through or what you're browsing through or searching for is just a very last minute thought. It's just not something at top of mind. So it's important to think about those things.
Yes, I agree. And there's one more item I want to mention under traveling cyber hygiene, and it's that you may want to disable the automatically connect option for Wi-Fi networks and even Bluetooth connections, because Bluetooth connections can also be spoofed or hijacked and used to eavesdrop on your regular communications. But on the other hand, if you, let's say, enable automatically connecting to Starbucks Wi-Fi and you're just walking around and there is a cyber criminal with a fake network called Starbucks Wi-Fi, your device would automatically connect to it. And that's, of course, not a very safe practice. So while traveling, maintain some degree of caution and try to avoid enabling automatic connections to public networks or unknown networks.
And that's just something, Vahid, you would go into your settings and just disable that, right?
In most cases, yes. Typically on smartphones or on laptops, when you connect to a Wi-Fi network for the first time, it asks, there's a prompt that asks whether you'd want to automatically connect to the same network from then on. And if you press no, you're on good grounds. If you if you press yes, then you'll need to go to the connection settings and disable automatic connection manually.
Okay. All right. Good morning. We're chatting with Vahid Behzadun. Dr. Behzadun is our cybersecurity expert here on the show. So I wanted to switch gears and talk now about online gaming, especially with the upcoming holiday. Vahid, I would imagine that for many youngsters, especially, maybe games and online gaming would be on their list for Santa, or maybe they received it for Hanukkah, or it's in their near future, or maybe they just got one in this past year. So I wanted to talk a little bit about, especially for adults who maybe aren't as familiar with tracking online gaming because it's something their kids are more familiar with, what they should be aware of and focused on this morning.
Well, first and foremost, it's very important to know that on games in general, mainstream games, are no longer offline and isolated programs that somebody runs on a computer or a console. The majority of the big names in the gaming industry have some online component to them. It may be as simple as just online verification and online license verification before starting the game in a gaming application or a gaming management platform like Steam. Or it may be as complex as a fully online multiplayer game, like many of the kids are familiar with these names, like Dota or World of Warcraft and so on, where the entirety of the game occurs in an online environment, in a connected environment. So the next thing to consider as a consequence of this connectedness is parents need to make sure that kids who play these games keep their personal information personal. If they are required to create an online profile for the games that they play, they need to make sure that the profiles contain none or very little personally identifiable information, and that includes in their choice of their account handle or username. And some of these profiles also ask for geographical location, which states you're in, and some profiles ask for some brief description, biographical description, and so on. It's very important to, again, keep personal information personal and not share too much information. The online gaming community is huge, and there are all sorts of people who dwindle in these sort of communities. Some are less trustworthy than others. So it's very important to maintain a degree of privacy on these platforms.
And the other thing, too,
also,
I was going to say, the other thing, too, Vahid, is that sometimes you have games like Fortnite, for example, where I know you can purchase things through the game. I don't play myself, but I'm just familiar with it with having younger siblings and just working in the news. What should you be aware of with your kids when it comes to, I would think, using money through their games or anything like that?
Right. So there are games that come with assets that can be traded between players. It's very important that these trades occur on an official trading platform. Offline or out of platform trades are very risky, both in terms of buying and selling. If you're selling assets, you may be sharing personal information, or you may become liable for some form of purchase and return scam, which has been going on platforms like eBay for at least a couple of decades now. And also, while you're buying, if you are using direct trades, or if you are not using an official and supervised platform, moderated platform, it's likely that you make the payment and you never get the goods, or the assets that you receive may not be what they were advertised, and you have absolutely no recourse in those circumstances. Another thing to keep in mind in gaming is what some call mods or add-ons that can be downloaded from third-party websites. These mods or add-ons are not always 100% secure. If it's a cheat, if it's a mod, if it's just a skin or add-on that you download from a gaming forum or somewhere on the internet, and somewhere unofficial on the internet, it's likely that those add-ons contain malware or contain something that may compromise the security of the system. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a PC or a laptop or a smartphone. Even gaming consoles are vulnerable to malicious software. So
it's just things that you need to be super aware of, especially as you're buying these for your kids or your grandkids, just to know that there's this whole other, it seems, life on the with online games as well. And Vahid, unfortunately, we have run out of time, but I so appreciate you giving us even some tips this morning for both travel and online gaming. Thank you so much.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Melissa.
Absolutely. And we'll talk again next time. And that, again, is Vahid Bezadun here on WICC.